Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic and guide to all things cinematic. He joins us weekly. The films The Night of the 12th, A Compassionate Spy, and Winter Kills.
I'd like to talk about three very different films this week. And the first one is a French movie called The Night of the 12th, La Nuit du 12, which is directed by a good French filmmaker named Dominique Malle. And it has a very honored film. The French equivalent of the Academy Awards are the César Awards. And The Night of the 12th got 10 nominations, and it won in six categories: Best Film, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, Most Promising Actor, which is a category that they have there. So anyway, it's a very honored film. I don't think it's a masterpiece, but it's a very good movie, and I certainly was very interested in it from beginning to end. It's also streaming, so people can find it pretty easily. So this is what we call in the trade a police procedural, because it is about the procedures that the police follow when they are working on a case. The movie, in fact, begins with a printed text on the screen, which reminds us that in police precincts everywhere, there's always cases that never get solved, and that kind of gives us a clue as to how the movie is going to come out. And that said, even though a lot of cases are never solved, a minority they claim, but there are cases that never get solved. The ones that are really sort of the worst are the ones that most bother the cops who are working on it and who don't ever manage to resolve the issue. And this movie, and this is a little warning I will give now, The Night of the 12th begins with a horrifying act of violence. It's very quick and it's over really soon. And it's what sparks the rest of the entire film, but it's pretty awful. And it involves the murder of a young woman, obviously a very nice, innocent, happy young woman who is on her way from one place to another after dark, and then the unthinkable happens to her. And so the police go right to work on the case. And the main characters of the film are an older police officer who's been around for a long time and who's reaching the end of the road for him. He's just been through too much during all of his decades of police work. And then a very young police captain who has recently been promoted to that rank. And he is sort of the opposite number of that older, more grizzled police officer. And they set to work investigating this murder. And they start to realize that this attack must have been planned out in advance. But that doesn't tell them why it happened. She appears to be an innocent young woman without any complicated life of any sort. So they decide it's probably one of her lovers. She's a young woman and she enjoys love and sex. But then, of course, the big question is, who would it be? It turns out she had a lot of boyfriends, a few boyfriends, some more serious than others, and maybe it was one of them. So that's what this movie is about. Now, interestingly, even though I have, I think, correctly said that this is a police procedural, it really becomes different from a lot of movies of that ilk, because as it goes along, it becomes more about the psychology of these police officers who are working on this case. Again, the main ones that we spend the most time with are an old guy and a young guy, so they have sort of different perspectives on all of this. But in addition to that, we have how they become more and more bothered by the things that they're failing to uncover, and the little tasks and big tasks that come up along the way early in the film, telling the mother of the girl, how do you talk to a parent about this? And then the father, when he arrives home, how do you do this? And one of the cops really doesn't want to do this, says, I can do everything. I can go to look at the autopsy reports. I can look at the corpses. But telling the parents is something that I just can't handle. So things like that come up all throughout the movie, and it becomes very, very much a psychological study of the real tremendous mental toll taken by certain kinds of police work. And these are, by the way, thoughtful and fastidious police officers who really believe in the work they're doing and really want to do a good job, and they are very frustrated and bothered and even haunted by the problems that come up along the way and the things that it turns out that they're just never able to solve or resolve. So it's a very interesting psychological police procedure, and I found it very effective. It's a slow-moving film. It's a dark film, but it's also, I think, a very engrossing film, and I really do very strongly recommend it. As I said earlier, now I would like to talk about three very different films this time. And so our second one is a documentary. And it's another one of these movies that is coming out now in the wake of the movie Oppenheimer. I don't think Oppenheimer is a great movie. It's a good movie, interesting movie, but it certainly is attracting a whole lot of people to come see it, despite its 3-hour running time. So it's one of the real big hits of this year. And movies have been coming out kind of sometimes a little bit belatedly, capitalizing on the interest that Oppenheimer has brought about, a renewed interest in the Los Alamos laboratory where the first atomic bomb was developed, and in the idea particularly of spying and things related to that. We must remember that, as the movie Oppenheimer very well shows, the head of that Los Alamos laboratory, J. Robert Oppenheimer, lost his security clearance after it was all over because he was suspected of being too much of a left-winger. And so we have now a movie which plugs even more directly into that angle of things. It's not about Oppenheimer. It's about a guy named Ted Hall. And I should mention, by the way, this movie is directed by Steve James, a very, very major documentary filmmaker whose movies in the past include Hoop Dreams and Stevie and other very, very important documentaries. So A Compassionate Spy is about Ted Hall, who did, in fact, pass crucial information to the Soviet Union and never got caught. The FBI suspected him, and they questioned him, and they put trails on him, and they followed him around and all of that, but they never actually arrested him and never actually pinned anything on him, even though, in fact, he did pass along this information to the Soviets. Now, why did he do that? He's asked that at one point in the movie, in an interview that is included in the film, an interview that was done for the BBC. Why did he do this? And he says it was because of compassion. And this movie takes him at his word on that. It says, yes, he was a compassionate spy. So what does that mean exactly? Well, I can only just begin to touch on it here. But basically, he, first of all, he really believed in socialism. And he really believed that the Soviets were bringing this very progressive and excellent new system into the world. And he wanted that revolution to spread. He wanted the world to accept this brand of socialism. Now, of course, there's a lot of stupid things in this thinking of his, but that was what he believed way back in the 1940s when he was working at Los Alamos. By the way, he was the youngest scientist hired on that project. Very, very young and brilliant man. So that was one reason why. Also, he just didn't feel that America should have all of this all to itself. He just didn't trust the American government or any single government to have something as powerfully destructive, as horribly destructive, as hideously destructive as nuclear weaponry. And so he felt, okay, let's get the Russians in on this. Let's get them, give them the information that they will need to progress along this front too. And then maybe they'll balance each other out. And it won't just be one country that has a monopoly on all of this stuff. So these are the reasons, things that he regarded as compassionate reasons, why he did these things. He also had a very close friend when he was back in college who also was involved in some of this activity. And so we have a sort of a subplot dealing with this guy whose name was Saville Sachs. And various family members of these people are interviewed, especially of Ted Hall himself. He died some years ago, but his wife is very much a major character in this documentary. She was very much, her name is Joan Hall. And she was very much alongside him during this entire period. And she remembers everything, even though it was way back in the 1940s. And she is very open about it. And she tells what happened and she reveals what happened and she gives the reasoning for what happened. And it's just really fascinating to hear her talk about all of these things. So that lends a real immediacy to this, 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 this whole enterprise. So again, a lot of people are going to feel, well, this guy Ted Hall must have been a real villain. I mean, he did these things. He had these starry-eyed ideas about the nobility of Soviet socialism, and he wanted to help spread this through the world, and he didn't trust the American government to be the sole proprietor of something as horrific as nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. And so he did these things for these reasons, and they were perhaps very mistaken reasons. Maybe he was wrong about a lot of these things, but he really was idealistic. He himself says in the movie that he looked at the world through pinkish glasses, meaning, of course, Soviet red glasses, and he really, really wanted the world to become a better place, and he felt that by passing this information along to the Soviets, that he was helping to make the world a better place, or at least a less dangerous place. So we can agree or disagree with him about that, but this movie really gets into the nitty-gritty of what he did and why he did it, and with these fascinating interviews with his wife and with some other people. And, well, it's just a really, really, really interesting documentary and a very humane and humanistic documentary. Whether or not you agree with what Ted Hall did, whether or not you think that he was a wonderful person who was trying to do the right thing, or whether he was just a dope who didn't understand the horrors of what he was doing, whatever you feel about it, it's just a fascinating story to see unfolded by these people who were there and who knew about it. And again, it's all real. It's a documentary, and it's telling us what really happened. And I found it at least as interesting as the movie Oppenheimer. So now the third of my very different movies this week, we're back to a fiction again, but this time it's fiction which plugs into real life in an odd sort of way. I want to talk about a movie called Winter Kills. Now, this is a movie that came back way, way many years ago in 1979, and now it's been revived and it's back on the circuit, and you can find it streaming, but there is a new restoration of it, which is also opening theatrically. It's kind of interesting, this idea that it's been restored. I am just back, literally yesterday, from a film conference in Dublin that I participated in, and about the movie Vertigo, the great Hitchcock film from the late 1950s. And one of the events at this conference was a Zoom call with a couple of people who worked on a restoration of the movie Vertigo some years ago. Movies decay, they deteriorate, they wear out, especially if they're not properly stored, and these people helped to restore that Hitchcock masterpiece many years ago. And one of them was saying something sort of amusing. He said he wished there was a different term than restoration for taking an old movie and putting it back into looking as good as it looked when it was new, because it's become a marketing tool. It was very funny. He said, "Barbie, see the new restoration of Barbie," which is sort of funny. Well, okay, it's a marketing tool, but Winter Kills from way back years ago is now out again and in a restored version, and that's fine. It's a really interesting movie. So here is what it is about. It is a sort of weirdly fictionalized version of the aftermath of the John F. Kennedy assassination. What we have here is that the president of the United States has been assassinated. In this movie, it's a fictional president named Timothy Keegan. He was assassinated way back in 1960 during a visit to Philadelphia. So it's not really about JFK, but it's about sort of a similar situation. And yes, there was a federal commission that investigated this and decided that it was the work of a lone gunman who was killed a couple of days later. But while in police custody. So all of this is similar to, but not identical to, the JFK assassination. And it's aftermath. So anyway, there is a younger half-brother of the assassinated president, and suddenly somebody shows up and says to him, "My gosh, it was not a lone gunman who did all of this. It was a whole plot. It was a whole plan, and I'll prove it to you, because I will tell you where the rifle that actually did the killing is hidden." And so our young main character goes off, and yes, he finds that rifle, and it looks like this whole thing is completely true. So now he has to deal with his father, who is based on John F. Kennedy's rich and famous father, and try to get him to help provide the money and resources to investigate this whole thing again and find out what really happened and expose the cover-up and all of this. So again, what we have here is a very interesting parallel to the John F. Kennedy assassination story, but it's not exactly that. It's just sort of something like that, explored from a whole different angle. Well, this is based on a novel by Richard Condon, and the movie was directed by William Richard, who didn't direct many movies. This was his first one and almost his only one. And he turned it into sort of a very, very pitch dark comedy. So it's like watching a sort of a comic version of a horrific American event, but it's also sort of a satire of political investigations and a satire of political conspiracy theories and all of that. So I think it's very relevant in our world of today. And I have to mention the cast. Everybody is in this movie. Jeff Bridges plays the main character, but there's Anthony Perkins, Eli Wallach, Sterling Hayden, Dorothy Malone, Ralph Meeker, Richard Boone, Toshiro Mifune, and Elizabeth Taylor's even in it briefly, although she doesn't have any dialogue to say. So it's a marvelous movie with a terrific cast. It's a very bizarre and eccentric movie, but I suggest seeking it out, whether you see the restored version in a theater or catch it streaming somewhere. It's an interesting, quirky, and unique movie. So that is my very diversified story this week.
For which we thank you, as always and ever, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films The Night of the 12th, A Compassionate Spy, and Winter Kills.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.